Yes, sir.
Hey, how are you doing? This is Todd South of the Times Free Press.
I'm doing well.
Good to hear. Good to hear. I know there's a little bit of a delay. I was actually in the service myself and over in Iraq a few years back, so I kind of know how this can be a little bit of a headache. I'll try to keep my questions clear and concise.
Okay.
Well, I have your bio sheet with some of the basic information. A couple quick things we always include. I just have to ask, what is your age?
I will actually be turning 32 on June 1st.
Okay. Actually, we're about the same age. My birthday is May 30th, so we're only a couple days apart. I'll be 32 as well.
Awesome.
I was a sergeant in the Marines, so you far outranked me in a very short period of time. So I guess I didn't beat you there. Sorry. Excuse me. Well, I went through some of the stuff that you had submitted. Just had a couple fairly routine questions. It mentions in there that your job is an intel advisor. I'm fairly familiar with that personally, but I don't think our readers are. Could you talk a little bit about, you know, that job as a day-to-day, what you do kind of on a day-to-day basis while you're in Iraq as an intel advisor?
Sure. Well, it's kind of twofold. Like, the first part is I take care of our U.S. pilots. I brief them every day on the threats in the area and, you know, what's happening across the country, specifically where they're going to be flying. And then on the second part of that, I advise the Iraqi pilots on the value of having good intelligence and good information. I also give them an intel brief, a weekly intel brief on what's happening across their country. I try to focus in on the air threat, since we're the Air Force, and how that affects them and how it can affect their missions as well.
Okay. Very interesting. That's a lot of information to compile. And have you worked as an intel officer your entire time in the Air Force?
Yes. I'll be coming up on 9 years in the Air Force in July.
Okay. All right. And it's mentioned that this is your second deployment. Where did you deploy to before, and can you tell me a little bit about how it's been similar or different this time around?
Sure. I deployed to Iraq. I was in Baghdad in 2008. For 6 months, from April to October-ish, I believe. And there I worked with the Army, and I did an actual, what we call an intelligence operation job. I specifically focused in on the western Iraq and northern Iraq, and I did kind of like the nodal analysis in defeating al-Qaeda in Iraq, AQI, trying to track down the bad guys, the insurgents, where they were, specifically how they were getting their money, because if we could take away their money and, break them where they were financially broke, then we could, kind of bring down the network, the cells in certain cities and stuff.
Yeah, it's kind of hard to fight a war if you can't pay for the weapons and the people, so that's kind of hit them where it hurts, as they say, right?
Right, exactly.
Well, I'm going to jump around a little bit here. You mentioned I had to jump to this. You mentioned in your personal info that you enjoy quilting. Can you tell me a little bit how you got started with that, and if you have any time at all to do that where you're at now?
Sure. I actually the last time I deployed in 2008, I worked on my master's. I picked up my master's and finished that, and then when I got tasked with this deployment, I was like, well, what am I going to do? I mean, you work a lot of hours, but you do still have a couple hours of free time, and, it's not like in the States where you can go get a movie or whatever. There's just really not a whole lot to do here. So I, through my church in San Angelo, Texas, where I'm stationed right now, I took a quilting class, kind of picked it up as a hobby, really enjoyed it, and I bought a sewing machine, and my husband shipped it out here to me when I got here last June, in June of 2010, and I've made about four or five quilts, and I just kind of sew every evening. It's a great stress reliever for me, so that's kind of how I got into it, and I have my friends from the church, and then, of course, family from Tennessee. They sent me quilting magazines and fabric and all sorts of things that I need to kind of do my hobby here.
Very nice, very nice. It's very good to be supported like that. And you have something to show for it. It's not like, you know, a lot of guys I knew, you know, they had downtime to play video games. I mean, that's fun, but you don't have a lot to show for at the end, I guess. You know, a finished product with quilting, so.
Right.
It says here you went to...
I'm not a big...
Go ahead, I'm sorry.
Oh, I'm not a big video person. I can watch movies and TV or listen to the radio and so it's pretty nice.
It says here that you went to UT, so you're a Vols fan. Any particular sports? And when the seasons come around, are you guys able to see any of that stuff? You know, either after the fact or live when you're deployed.
Absolutely, I was able to catch a couple of live Tennessee football games last football season. I had to get up really, really early in the morning, and sometimes even the AFN, the Armed Forces Network, was spotty at best. But it makes a difference. Actually, during football season, there was a contractor that worked in our squadron that was a diehard Vols fan as well. So we got to razz all the other SEC team fans here, and it's kind of a morale thing. I don't know if you got into sports when you were deployed over here in Iraq, but you know, it's kind of one of those things where you guys can all get together and watch games, you know, early in the morning in the NWR building, or a good reason to do a cookout or whatever. But yeah, definitely follow the sports, any of them. So I mostly watch football.
Great way to kind of connect with the stuff going on back home. I wanted to get back to kind of some of the stuff you're doing now, so people can understand a little bit better. Can you describe a little bit of kind of you where you're at? I know it says you're near to Crete. I wasn't personally on a base. I was there during the invasion, so we were just kind of driving the whole time. But what's the living conditions like? It sounds like you can get some TV sometimes and things. I mean, well, I guess what's it like in the base you're at now near to Crete?
The best way to kind of describe it is a minimum security prison. Our base is 16 square miles. There's just not a whole lot here. It's pretty flat. We have a couple of buildings here and there. And, of course, we have up here in the Air Force, we have the airplanes that are the Iraqi airplanes. We do have TV, the Armed Forces Network. We have about five or six channels that we can usually get. There's one radio station through AFN, and no movie theater here. We have one dining facility. We do have a Burger King and a Subway. Well, and Green Beans, of course, the coffee shop.
At least a little bit of a change. I'm sure you get tired of those two themselves, but at least better than just a chow food every day. That's got to be nice. Since your position is pretty key of being an intelligence officer, I thought I'd ask this question. You know, a lot of people, a lot of the public at least, not non-military, you know, the focus is really kind of turned, in the media at least, to Afghanistan. Things have wound down a bit in Iraq, but I know as well as you that there's still stuff left to do. Could you kind of explain a little bit to folks who maybe have not been paying close attention to Iraq for the last year or two, kind of what the military is still doing there in a general sense? I know you can't talk about specific missions, but kind of what the military that's still there, still stays like yourself, are trying to do before we're able to completely leave? You know?
The big thing is advising, assisting, training, and equipping the Iraqi Air Force, specifically for me, but all military. That's kind of our main objective right now. And it can range anything, you know, for here for the Air Force, you know, performing maintenance on the aircraft. You know, we're doing pilot training. We're starting to also train the Iraqi maintenance people so they can start taking over maintenance of their own aircraft. They can start running their own training program, and that they can be, you know, completely self-sufficient and plan their own defense of their own country is essentially the end goal there.
And you mentioned before you'd had a six-month deployment back in 08. How long? You said you got there last June, so you've been there close to a year now?
Yes, sir. I get to go home in about 2 weeks. I get to start my travel home, so I'm pretty excited.
Oh, wow. I'm almost in time for your birthday then.
Yeah.
I'll start
traveling on my birthday out of Iraq, and then I'm hoping I can get home before my anniversary on the 8th. So,
okay. You'd mentioned, of course, some of the hardest part about this being away from your family. Would you mind, if you would like, would you mind sharing anything about that? Like, you said you have two children. How old are they? What are they doing now while you're gone? Can you talk a little about that if you like?
Sure. I have a son who's 7. His name is John.
Okay.
And I have a daughter, Georgia Ann. She's 5. And then, of course, my husband is Eric. And he's 32 as well, but he's older than we are. He turned 32 in March.
Yeah, a couple months on. Well, I just make sure I don't want to make a mistake. Daughter, you said Georgia Ann. Is that hyphenated? How's that spelled?
It's spelled just like the state.
Mm-hmm.
And Ann is just A-N-N.
Okay. So it's just two separate words, Georgia Ann Shirley.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And Eric is E-R-I-C or E-R-I-K?
E-R-I-C-K, both.
Oh, really? I've never seen that. E-R-I-C-K. I'm glad I asked. E-R-I-C-K.
Yeah.
All right. And so now they're in San Angelo right now. Is that correct?
Yes, sir.
Okay. And
that's where I'm at. Oh, go ahead.
I was going to say how long you'd been there. I guess you were getting ready to explain that.
Yeah, I'm stationed at Goodfellow Air Force Base in San Angelo, Texas. I was an instructor for the intelligence officer course there for the Air Force.
Okay.
I was there for 4 years. My family will be there a total of 5 years, counting the year I was in Iraq. And I just got orders to Germany, to go to Stuttgart, Germany next. So we're excited about that.
But you are obviously coming home to pack up and do everything. Are you going to be able to swing by Chattanooga and see family here before you get stationed over there permanently, or is it kind of a pick up and go once you get back to Texas?
No, I'll be able to take a leave en route, so we'll tie up all of our loose ends in Texas, and then we're going to drive to Tennessee. We'll probably, we plan to be in Chattanooga around the 4th of July, end of June, stay through the 4th of July, and then before we head on out to Germany.
Very nice. Well, that's appropriate. That's a good time of year, especially since I'm being military and all that. It's very nice that it kind of matches up that way. I need to ask you about some recent news. Everybody's still kind of top of conversation on everybody's mind, and whenever we have a chance to give people's reflections, I like to do that. You talked about your deployment in 08. You assessed threats, looked at Al-Qaeda. Well, as it's no big secret, as we all know, just a few weeks ago, the military was able to take out Osama bin Laden over in Pakistan. I was wondering, how did you learn about that news, and what was the reaction among the troops, yourself and the other airmen and airwomen there when you guys learned?
Well, we learned about it through the media, just like everybody else. We actually got up in the morning. It's 4:30 in the afternoon here for us on Tuesday. So when we got up early in the morning on that day, it was already across the news and everything. So it was big news for us. Of course, we were all happy. But here in Iraq, not to get down into the details and bore the audience here, it's mostly a Shia population. Osama bin Laden was a Sunni, so there wasn't really all that big of an impact, across the battle space for Iraq on the death of Osama bin Laden. I mean, it was a topic of discussion across the country, even with our Iraqi pilots and the Iraqi maintainers that we have. Most, were pretty happy that he was dead, just like we were. They believed that he was a terrorist, just like we thought he was. It was kind of just one of those things. Well, that's great. We made that objective, but as far as the tactical things that we need to do here, we still gotta do them.
That's kind of what I did a couple of stories, getting kind of local veteran reaction and some military members at the time of that news, and it's pretty much across the board. Like, I mean, even my reaction as well, most of the military is like, oh, that's great, okay, move on, charge ahead, we got another job to do. It's not a lot of celebrating in the streets.
Yeah, exactly.
When you have to do it. Yeah, exactly. You know exactly what it's like. Yeah, exactly. I'm stepping a little bit outside the questions here, and you feel comfortable answering how you want to answer, but I did want to kind of pose this to you since you have, you are an officer in the Air Force and have spent, 9 years in the military. I think it'd be good to ask this question. For for most of the history of our armed forces, a lot of women were not allowed to serve in combat roles, and still technically are not allowed to serve in some combat MOSs. But with Afghanistan and Iraq, there's been a lot of positions where women such as yourself and others are put in those places. Do you think that there's kind of some review going on within the Pentagon and within Congress about possibly changing some of that? Do you have a kind of an opinion about that? That perhaps those there should be some opening up of some of those jobs for women who want to do them?
Well, it depends. Definitely. I raised my hand and took an oath, just like anybody else. Willing to die for my country if that's what was called for me. Where I disagree with women being placed in these roles is if they can't meet the minimum requirements, like for special operations or like Navy SEALs or something like that. If you have to lower the standards in order to allow females to do that job, then I disagree with them being placed there, because those standards are there for a reason, specifically when you talk about special operations. And there's other ways in which females can support those missions. Like, I can support special operation missions from an intel perspective, and I can be very valuable to those missions without having to also be a, what's the word I'm looking for? You're only as strong as your weakest link. I don't want to be a liability to my team. I want to be able to help them. Does that make sense?
Oh, of course. Yeah, I think that's a common that's a common thought among a lot of people I talk to, and me personally. I think it totally makes sense. It's a merit based system. If you can meet the qualifications, then you should be given an opportunity. But if not, then obviously you don't change the standards for that. Like you said, you've got unit integrity to think about, and obviously kind of what the performance is. So that totally makes sense. I just want to get straight from those affected, like such as yourself and the men and women you serve with. So that definitely is something that people are talking about. It's not a headline front page news CNN kind of topic, but it is kind of going around the halls of Congress and in Pentagon, and I've just kind of talked periodically with local female veterans and military members about it. So I'm just kind of curious to see what people think. So I appreciate you sharing your opinion on that. I think I got most of the information I need. I did just want some kind of a big picture question. I don't know if you wanted to just kind of talk a little bit about, what you've enjoyed about your time so far, both serving overseas and also in the military, and what's kind of been difficult about it. If you would like to share that, it's up to you.
Sure. This deployment has had some good points about it. I mean, it's great to work with the Iraqis. It definitely, especially being a female, they get to see value added that we can bring to the fight, I guess, even though they are still way far off on allowing females in their military. They can definitely see the American culture, how I interact with my male counterparts. I've also definitely, I believe, gained their trust and their respect. They come to me to ask questions, to work through some issues and problems that we might be having in regards to the mission that we have here and training the Iraqi pilots. I also support the Iraqi squadron commander as well, helping him with other projects and help getting his squadron up and running. I've really enjoyed that relationship and getting to know these guys. I mean, you read about all the negative stuff, in Iraq, the failure in the formation of their government, it's not completely formed yet, and all their bureaucracy and stuff, but you get to see these pilots and you get to talk to them, and they like their country, and they're just as frustrated with their government as, as what we are seeing portrayed in the news, and they hate the corruption, just as much, and they're trying to do something for their country to make it better, and it's frustrating for them, and you kind of have to respect it, because they don't always get paid on time. They always don't get reimbursed for their expenses. They're also a target for assassination by the insurgents out there, just because they are wearing the uniform and working for their government. They are definitely a liability. Some of them are volunteering to be pilots without the approval of their parents, which is kind of a big deal within the Muslim culture. so I definitely respect them for what they're doing. I've learned a lot about their culture as well and their attitude towards things, and I've definitely enjoyed that. The hard part, you know, has obviously been just being away from my family. You know, you kind of look back. I went on R&R in March, and there's just certain things you take for granted, just little freedoms that, you know, you just don't get over here in a deployment environment. You know, I can't go see the latest movie out at the box office just because that is just not available here. I don't have 100 channels on my cable TV. Just little things, you know, having your own vehicle to get in and drive wherever you want. And then just missing your family. I miss my family terribly. I can't wait to see them in a couple of weeks. I mean, it's a whole year of my kids' life, both of them, that I've missed. Milestones, soccer season, cheerleading. I'll never get that time back with my kids.
I'm sure it's difficult. I didn't have children at the time I deployed, so I can't really relate to that. But I know a lot of friends who did, and they always said similar things. So I'm happy to hear that you're going home soon, and I'm sure you're going to enjoy it and relish in all that time with them. And I'm sure, and the trip here, and then off to Germany. That sounds great. I think what I'm probably going to do with this is we've not done one of these before, but I do some of the military coverage for the paper. So occasionally we have like just little things we can put in the paper. It may not be a full story that runs, say, like on the front page or on a Sunday or anything. But we do with these little things called Q&As, basically like kind of what we just did. You know, I may not include a lot of other information than just some of the question and answers that we just went through. Kind of give people a better idea just from a personal perspective of kind of what that's all about. Sometimes we do it with like local government people, police officers, military members. So that's probably what's going to happen with this. I don't know when they'll run it in the paper. It'll most likely be in the next few days or sometime this week. They don't usually hold it too long. But it probably won't be like tomorrow or anything. I can give you my email so that if your parents or someone are looking for it, you can shoot me an email or I can email you back or vice versa and let you know when it does run, when they decide to run it, if that makes sense.
Okay.
Do you have a pen? You ready to copy?
Yes, sir.
Okay. It's just my first initial and last name, T South, TSOUTH.
Okay.
@ timesfreepress.com. Just the name of the paper, just timesfreepress.com, all lowercase.
Okay.
And they sent a photo. I just want to quickly ask. They sent a photo of you sitting next to an airplane. I know you're an intelligence officer, but I don't know too much about the Air Force beyond just some work I did a long time ago. Do you ride in that plane at all as part of your duties, or is it simply you just do like some of the reports for the guys and gals that fly those planes?
Right. That's I support the T-6. That's actually a T-6, which is it's called the T-6 Texan.
Okay.
Aircraft, and it's the trainer aircraft that the U.S. Air Force pilots use as part of their training program.
Okay.
And the Iraqis have bought 15 of them.
Okay.
And all 15 of them are here at Tikrit, and we are training the Iraqi pilots. And most of the Iraqi pilots are probably going to learn how to fly the T-6 before they go on to their other aircraft with, you know, whatever other aircraft the Iraqi Air Force might acquire. It's a, you know, a fixed-wing aircraft. It's highly maneuverable. It can pull a couple of Gs. It can do barrel rolls and things like that. So it's a really good trainer aircraft for the Iraqis to have. It definitely increases their capability. And then, of course, our pilots are training them on that. We have actually now 3 fully qualified Iraqi instructor pilots, which is kind of a big deal because the pilot and training syllabus, is about a year long.
Wow, that's good. I mean, that's definitely something, a key asset to have, especially when they, like you said, part of your job, getting them to train themselves so that they know how to be self-sustaining. That totally makes sense. Well, I think I've got like some of the information. That photo that we sent, we may use that. If for some reason, sometimes pixels or size or they can't do the right cropping, if for some reason they can't use the photo that they sent, Would you have another photo that you could send, just like more of like of a close-up shot, just kind of like a headshot of yourself, maybe in uniform? Because that might be all they're able to run. They might not have space for a full-length photo. I just don't know how the layout
would
work.
Did they just send that one?
Yeah, they just
to you?
The only one I have, an attachment. I looked through all the attachments, and it was just the one with you next to the plane. Unless they forgot to send something else.
All right, because I have one that I took right before I deployed.
Mm-hmm.
It says me in uniform with the flag behind. You know, it's all the deployment pictures.
So it's a fairly close up shot. So sometimes with the larger shots, if they try to crop, the details isn't good enough, so they can't use that. And we may have to just use basically kind of like a headshot, basically, so people kind of can see your face when they read the Q&A. If you have time to send that today or first thing tomorrow, that'd probably be helpful just to have that as an option.
Absolutely, I can send that to you.
Okay. Well, thanks a lot. And, hey, stay safe and have a safe trip home and happy early birthday. And I wish you well.
All right, thank you. Happy birthday to you too, Todd.
Yes.
I appreciate it.
Thank you. Have a nice day.
You too.
Bye.
Bye-bye.